Carl, are you ready?
We don't have to call the roll again, do we, since we just
took
a temporary recess?
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. We will come back to order. We got ahead of ourselves, so we took a break because this is a 3:30 time certain, and now we're here. So, Carla, would you please read the item?
Yes. Item 998, accept report on the African immigrant and refugee community in Multnomah County.
Well, this is an important piece of work and a great joint venture between the Coalition of Communities of Color and Portland State University and other partners as well. I know we have a panel of presenters. In fact, I'm not sure who's on first, so you know who you are. Dante and others, come on up, and we'll kick it off. Thank you for being here.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Dante James. I'm the director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and I'm extremely pleased to be here to introduce the presentation of this report on African immigrants and refugees in Multnomah County. As you know, the Coalition of Communities of Color is responsible for the preparation of this document and presentation of this document, as well as so many other research documents regarding communities of color in this county. This is the first of its kind in the state of Oregon, specific to African refugees and immigrants. And this city had a huge part in the initial work of the coalition in providing $50,000 to the beginning of the work that the coalition has done regarding its research into all of the communities that it has prepared reports for. Again, this is the first study of its kind in the state, and it's extremely important, and I'm very proud to just introduce this and humbled to introduce this because of the population that we are talking about. They are here. I think the report will provide some very sobering information for you, as well as some heartening information. The 28 countries that are represented in this county, I think, is a huge statement to the wealth that the community brings. It is the fourth largest immigrant community in this city and in this county. It's also beset by significant amounts of child poverty, by significant amounts of unemployment. But within that, in the unemployment piece, you'll hear that fully one-third of the immigrants who are here are in management positions, supervisory positions, many, many, many holding a higher education degree. The downside of that is sometimes your taxi driver will have a PhD, and he or she is driving that taxi. And so how do we improve our ability to really, really accept all of the wonderful things that this community brings with it? And so what we're really talking about is some of the social and economic indicators and ethical issues that will beset this city and the city needs to address to most welcome this population of people in our city. And so I truly encourage you to accept the report, but do more than accept it, but really read it, take it to heart, and have the conversation about what can we do with the recommendations that will allow us to really, really, really make a difference as we move forward. So, again, I thank you for the opportunity to introduce this report, and I'm going to now make the next introduction, and I'm going to step away and let it speak for itself. But I'd like to introduce Mr. Lipo Cha, who is the Assistant Director of IRCO, but also the immediate past co-chair of the coalition. So without further ado, Lee, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you very much, Mr. James. Mayor Howes and Board of City Commissioners, this is a great opportunity to be in front of you to share with you again one more time in terms of our community research data. And to echo what Mr. James have said earlier, on behalf of the coalitions and certainly the immigrant and refugee community, we are very grateful for your leaderships and the kind of support that you have gave the coalition which the African Immigrants and Refugee is a member of, to further look into the demographic and also more critically looking into how well the African Immigrants and Refugee are doing in our city, in our counties, and in this region, given that historically Oregon has been in the top 10 or in the top 15 as a resettlement state for the whole nation. And so this research demographic data and recommendation would be specifically looking into a deeper in our immigrants, in the African immigrants and refugee population. One of the things that I'd like to share with you is that we're very grateful to have the city to use an equity lens to determine and develop its 25 years vision. But what's more critical here is that we as immigrants and refugee or community of color, we need to also then look into it deeper and see what it really mean. If we want it to be equitable and if we really want every community, every neighborhood to be a thriving community and healthy community, then what does it really mean to all of us? Because among people of color, we believe that one size does not fit all. We may have a wonderful model, but unless we are willing to modify and tailor those systems and model to address the needs of the very different and diverse culture and linguistic group of people, we may not reach the ultimate goal that we wanted to. And so again, on behalf of the coalition, I'd just like to really take this opportunity to, you know, express our gratitude and appreciation toward the cities, your leaderships and your support in making all Portlanders thriving individuals and community. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Shabri Vickers, who will go on to begin to actually share with you the finding and really share with you the purpose why we're here. And then later on, you will hear from our PI person, Dr. Anne Curry Stevens, to further give you the details information on this research finding. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Shabri Vickers, and I'm a member of the Executive Committee of the Portland African American Leadership Forum, which you guys know of. I am excited to be here today as my friends and allies in the African immigrant and refugee community release their report, a comprehensive and enlightening profile of their community here in Multnomah County. I want to start by putting us on one accord by sharing an African proverb that says, if you want to go quickly, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together. The African Immigrant and Refugee community represents the best of what the Coalition of Communities of Color has to offer. The diversity of this community alone is both remarkable and instructive. As you are all aware, I am a staunch advocate for leadership development, youth engagement, and public education. But let me also join the voice of many who know that how little our schools offer when it comes to teaching students about the continent of Africa or the immigration, refugee, and settlement experience. This missed opportunity is an early driver of invisibility, something my own community knows a thing or two about. And that's one of the reasons I'm here today and continue to be alongside the African immigrant and refugee community. Our collective voice represents thousands upon thousands in Multnomah County, and it is no longer silent. In solidarity, we raise up to act on behalf of all communities of color, focusing on socioeconomic disparities, institutional racism, and inequity of services experienced by our most vulnerable community members. We know that social service and governmental databases subsume the African identity within that of the African American community and how this practice undermines the diversity of these communities, as well as undermines the unique experiences and oppression faced by both African Americans and African immigrant and refugees. Because of this, the African immigrants and refugees experience is often invisible in databases. We know that when data on populations is not disaggregated, social services and governmental entities cannot properly meet the specific needs to end disparities in African American and African immigrant and refugee communities. Today, I want you to see me and know that there is solidarity within the African-American community and within that of the African immigrant and refugee communities. Thank you for joining us and for supporting us in the self-determined collective action so that every member of our community may experience wellness, justice, and prosperity. Thank you.
Thank you. Very well done. Who's next? Come on up. How are you?
Good. Again, thank you, Mayor, and the commissioners for this opportunity to bring, you know, focus on the issue regarding the African community. First, I would like to introduce on my right Dr. Ann, who will present the finding of this report, and on my left, Kofi Desu, who will talk about the recommendation and also what are the follow-up that need to be done. Again, thank you for your support. Thank you for supporting the African community with financial support, material support to realize this report. Again, like Dante said, this is the first time we're having official document that represent African issue and has data on African in the county or in the city of Portland. I also want to take this opportunity to thank all the African leaders here in the room and African organizations supporting this effort for the last 3 years in order to for us to come up with a document, that an official document that represents our problem and need and what need to be done so that we can help, you know, family who are coming here in the city of Portland. This report, you know, present the state of African living in the county or in the city of Portland. We have a lot of disparity from education attainment to economic to employment to housing. Even among the six coalition of community of color, the African community is at the bottom on all the issues. So this report, you know, we want to bring to shed light on all those issues and how we can work together in order to support, you know, our community. Another, you know, issue that we have that we need help from the city as soon as possible is the issue of gang prevention in our community. This is a new thing that's happening in our community. Our family and parents don't understand what's happening with our youth. So we want help from the city to help us with this gang education and prevention, but we want to participate with the city so that we can be involved in designing a program that will help, you know, those families to help their children. We indeed have a support from the city for the last 6 months with the gang issue, but the program is not designed by the community, so communities still don't trust the program and don't understand. Some of family don't even understand what's gang, what we are talking about. So we want a program that involves all the families, involve parents, involve everybody. Even though right now, with the help of the city, we have two staff working on the gang prevention issue, because the program is not designed to work with family and communities, those people who are working for those programs being suspected by our community. Imagine people coming from a totalitarian regime where everything involved police, law enforcement is regarded as spying on the community. So we want a program where you can help us to bring community together, to bring all the family together and to start a debate or a dialogue on the issue and again, and how we can help our kid attain, you know, the education. All of us refugees or immigrants who came here, we came to give bright light to our children. We did not come here to the United States to help ourselves, but we came here in order for our children to get the education, necessary education needed, and also to help us as parents and also help family back home. There is a Somali lady who told me that, Jimmy, you know what, we don't have 401k. Our children are our 401k. So we relied on our kids to help us tomorrow when we reach our old age. So again, this is the main issue that we really need help as soon as possible, if you can. And at the same time, I will give the floor to Anne to talk about the data funding that will summarize all the issues represented in our community. We are about over 30,000 African, representing 28 different communities here in the metro area. So we are a force. We are not going back home. We are becoming a citizen, and we want also to participate in our society. But in order for us to participate, we have to be able to reduce all this disparity that create a huge gap between us and the rest of the community. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your leadership and in particular for getting involved in the Youth Gang Violence Task Force so we can all work together to get in front of that problem. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think I feel like sometimes you're tired of seeing my face all the time. But
happy to see you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, County Commissioner, City Commissioners. My name's Ann Curry Stevens at Portland State University, and I'm here today to share with you some of the key findings of the report that we prepared on the African immigrant and refugee community. This is a community that is growing very quickly. It is a community that is, as Jimmy said, is here to stay, is growing clearly faster than our white communities, and is growing in proportion to other regions of the USA. It's also a community that continues to be seriously undercounted. So when we turn to our conventional data counts around how big this community is, please know and please hold a space of skepticism about how large the community is. Our work, and you'll see the details in the report, indicate that we're assessing that there's close to a 55% undercount of the size of this community. So it's a community that's growing very quickly, moving from 1990 at about 1,200 people to today being at close to 12,000 people, with an estimation in our best understanding of being a population that's above 18,000 in Multnomah County today. The birth rate of this community is about growing about twice as quickly as that of the white community, and then there is also a significant number of new arrivals into the region. This is a community that is facing dire economic challenges. The average annual income in Multnomah County for the white community is at just over $55,000 a year. That's what households are trying to live on average. That number in the African community is half, at $26,000 a year, trying to meet the needs, and that is the average number. As we turn to looking at what happens when people get work, we now look at the next income variable, and we're looking at the incomes of full-time, year-round workers. So these are folks who have successfully gotten work. And over on the left side of the chart, you'll see the white community at different measures across the nation. So at the national level, at the Oregon level, and in Multnomah County, and you'll see that white folks working full year are about making the comparison level of what's happening across the nation for the white average community. What we see here are two troubling trends. Number one, again, for full-time year-round workers, we're looking at incomes that are getting close to half that of white workers. You'll also notice this troubling trend that the closer you get to Multnomah County, the more economically challenged Africans are in getting work that pays at equivalent levels to those of their national and even Oregon-wide comparators. At our first report, when we released it in 2010, we talked about Multnomah County being distinctly toxic for communities of color. And that's evidence of that pattern, that the closer we get to the local areas, the more specific our measures are, the more economically challenged our communities are. That's a similar dynamic for the African community. Certainly.
Sub-Saharan African?
Certainly. It is folks, and there's a definition at the back of the report. So the northern countries of Africa are sometimes recognized as being Middle Eastern, and then the Sub-Saharan, of which is the majority of the community, is more gets reported out more consistently in our databases. So this was a measure of the most of our report is the entire African continent, folks from that region. This specific piece is from the Sub-Saharan community.
And on that piece, how do the Middle Eastern folks fare?
We don't know yet. We'll know that in about a year from now.
It's a
relatively small community, but we'll be having some information. The poorest of our community who come from Africa are deeply, deeply imperiled. We're looking, if you remember when we've talked sort of globally about these data, we generally have been saying that incomes are about half and poverty rates are about triple. In the African community, most of our poverty rates are about four times worse than the white community. So we're looking at, on the far left of that chart, we're looking at a child poverty rate of 55%. That means more than half of our kids from the African community are living in poverty today. When we look at that, when we bring our data up to 2011, and we compare what's happening across time, the white community, we're looking at about 1 in 6 white kids living in poverty. And that's a very distressing number all in of itself. When we look at what's happening, and especially in this economic climate, where things began to go terrible in 2008, they've rapidly deteriorated to 2/3 of our kids of color, or sorry, our African children are living in poverty today. So that's a more current piece than the last piece of data we saw. This is a community also challenged by language and access to language programs, where more than 1/3 of the community is not able to speak English very well, which means then that interface with teachers, interface with the healthcare system, being able to answer questions from the police or from child welfare systems become that much more challenging. Investments in resources that are available to the community under the conditions in which they can best learn are very strongly advised. So hours of operation, days of the week, location of access would help address this issue. We ended up going and surveying the community themselves to get more of a descriptive narrative around what it was like socially and economically. And the results of in this pie chart show us in the blue section on the right that 3/4 of the community has much less than they need to pay the bills. It's a very high level. So this is more than just poverty. This is low income living. This is folks at the lower end of the economic spectrum. But look at how high of those that were surveyed in this report detailed about their challenges. When we transition to employment, we generally talk about this as being good jobs and bad jobs or not so good jobs. Our good jobs are over on the left, in the management and professional arena. And in the management and professional arena, about 1/3 of Africans are able to, working age Africans are able to access management positions. And in comparison, it's significantly worse by way of outcomes than the white community. What you'll see in a few charts, charts slides on from here, is this is despite the fact they have higher education levels. So you'll see the interplay of income, of occupation income and education in a moment. In the worst jobs, those are our service industry jobs, we're looking at about 1/5 of the community tending to be our more precarious, lowered opportunity kinds of employment. So higher representation in our not as good jobs. There's a quick point I'd like to make, and it came up at a meeting I was at earlier today, where when we think about economic development, we need to think about jobs that will reach folks that need them the most. We need to think about the availability of jobs being the first pathway out of poverty. Then we think about economic supports and transfers later on, but we really need to think, how can we be proactive in making sure there are jobs for folks that need them the most? When we speak now about what happens for our educated professionals who are unable to get work, this slide comes out of the Migration Policy Institute and talks about what's happening at the national level. In this slide, you can see the African community at the towards the left hand of the slide, that those who've arrived in the last 10 years, one-third of them are significantly underemployed. Means that they have a college degree, but they have a job that needs no more than modest on-the-job training. And notice, so there's two very distressing things here. One is that this is a community on a continental level compared to Europe, compared to Asia, which is faring significantly worse. This is also a challenge where the profile for these arrivals, these folks who are arriving, is getting exponentially worse. So we've gone from those that arrived more than 10 years ago at one-fifth of them to today being more than a third, being unable to get work that matches their academic preparation. Very challenging situation for us today. The next slide covers data in our own survey, and I'll draw your attention primarily to the far left here, that says of those we surveyed, almost one in two of them were unable to have their credentials recognized in employment here.
Can I ask about that?
Certainly.
What can be done about that? Is that a matter of, at the state level, having the rules of the licensing boards changed in order to recognize foreign credentials?
Initiatives could be catalyzed at the city level, at the county level. It could be catalyzed by universities. I work at the School of Social Work. We could initiate a recognition of foreign credentials program for internationally trained social workers. There are a number of issues, and you'll get to this a little later on in the presentation. But you could start pilot projects that could link people to work. We also could start programs that allowed the larger portion of their credentials to be recognized, and then just provided one or two courses to top that up, or one or two on-the-job training initiatives that would let people start work in their fields and then get some of the whatever they need to do it. I'll share with you a fascinating piece of data that says that the average cost of a four-year degree to a government is $147,000. If we take advantage of that, it means our state doesn't have to pay for it because another country has already paid for the cost of the education. If we can provide that translational piece in terms of skills and knowledge, they could move into that area. It becomes a number of countries have initiated these types of programs. They can be initiated at the local level. Without it, it's what we're calling a colossal waste of economic resources, of economic capital, by not helping folks get into their work.
Yeah, I know we're going to want to hear more about that, in that city government doesn't do the credentialing, but you say we can catalyze that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're very interested in options and opportunities for how we can do that.
Fantastic.
We don't license dentists or plumbers, but we know the people that do. So,
yes.
You know, how does that, how could that work? So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you. We turn now to unemployment rates. So when people are credentialed, this is part of the same problem of not being able to get jobs in your field to not being able to get jobs at all. And we're looking at 17% of Africans in this last economic stretch of time, this last period, being unable to get work, which is more than double that of the white community. So the impacts of this economy are being unfairly, unevenly shouldered by our most marginalized communities. If we turn to health issues and health disparities, there are a number of significant challenges, Number one, as you've heard about, is the data problem, is the visibility of the community. We don't know how many refugees are in this region because none of our data systems ask people if they've arrived here as refugees, which then also means that a number of health issues that are tied to being a refugee get untended. And we have a report from the WHO that says that 20% of immigrants, 44% of refugees suffer from depression, anxiety disorders compared to 7% of the average population. So this is a community of high need, and our data systems don't support knowing about this. We then also have a consistent challenge with our mainstream services that are unable to respond effectively in a culturally responsive way to the needs of the communities of color that are in front of them. We also have some local research around hospital culture, and it's not uncommon for folks receiving hospital care in Multnomah County to experience fear, disrespect, humiliation, and racism. Health insurance is obviously the first barrier that keeps people out of getting access to health insurance. Hopefully this will change in the very near future as people are able to enroll in healthcare supports, but it's a number that's double that of the white community. Now we turn to one of the new stories facing our communities of color, facing the African community here, is that this is a highly educated community, especially at the graduate level. There are, however, folks that are challenged who are youth and not successfully encountering our public school system, and you'll see some of that data as well. So what we see here in this next chart is that we have a small African community at less than 10% that don't have a high school degree, and 30% of them do have high school degree or do have a university degree. And what we're now going to show you is that of the white community, about two-thirds of them have bachelor's degree, about one-third of them have graduate degrees. Compare that to the African community, and we have more than three-quarters have a graduate or professional degree. And so it's those highly trained folks who we are missing out on being of benefit to our community and being of an ability to turn their educations into good-paying jobs to support their family and to support their community. When we turn now to the current education encounter, and how are our kids today encountering the public school system? We see here this is a composite measure by language of how our communities are faring. And what we have today on average, and then we're compiling, this is referred to as the achievement gap, how many folks are completing and passing the Oaks test, 77% of our white kids are meeting or exceeding benchmarks in standardized tests. Less than 40% of our African students are meeting or exceeding benchmarks. This is a wake-up call for our school districts. This is the first time we're being able to pull apart the data by language. We said we can't pull them out from the racial identifiers, but we can pull them out by language and identify how the community is facing challenges. So this is a really important new piece of data. The African languages are represented on that chart, as well as the numbers and how large those communities are, and the definition of which languages are tied to which communities are in the report. The visibility of this community is a challenge. You've already heard this, that they're encompassed within the larger African American or black community. There are some supplemental ways that this could be addressed by using language files, by asking people to identify their language on various intake forms. We also want to see refugee status. We'd also like to see ancestry, which has let us pull out the majority of the data for this report, and by year of arrival into the USA. Those types of directions would really help improve us hearing and understanding how our systems are faring. So in total, in this, our reports have typically covered 28 different systems and institutions. This community is only visible in 8 of those. Only in 1/4 of our systems is the experience of the community possible to tap into. Remember, as the driving force, that successful refugee integration depends on a holistic set of forces. And so learning English, getting employment, having education be successful, being housed safely, having access to health care and culturally responsive health care, having connection to one's own community, and then having that community be seen as a resource and a source of social capital and valuation for the region at large, all of those are part of what makes for a successful, thriving African community. So let's remember to pay attention to moving on all of those areas. I'm going to close my part of this report with a recognition of what we often get asked is, why are disparities so challenging? And where should we as governance bodies and leaders in helping improve our systems? And so I want to say that the community recognizes, the Portland State, the academic side of this certainly recognizes there are a lot of historic variables. A lot of history continues. But please also know that we have a lot of influence and a lot of option to change the culture, change our policies, and by that change some of the immediate outcomes for our communities of color that will then have a positive ripple effect. And so we've done a little simple mapping for you on to sort of the web of factors that influence disparities. And so there are on the top left the pre-existing situations and also the current economic situation. It's very difficult to overcome the challenges of the economic downturn. But we do also have federal and state policies that the city and the county don't have any reach over, but it's those factors over there on the left. The local policies, local culture, local practice. And please also remember that when we have racism, one of the other dynamics and unequal treatment and experience, we also have unfavorable, unbalanced, unfair advantages for folks that look like me. That it's not just racism and discrimination and lack of access, it's I'm getting too much of the benefits from the situation, and white folks get too many of the benefits. So we need to trouble, and we need to understand that it's not just the diminishment, but it's the excessive valuation that needs to be unpacked at the same time. The next chart I won't bother trying to explain. There's way too much detail for anybody to take a look at. But if you want to know sort of some of the specifics around how some of this manifests, that would be where we go. So with this, I'm pleased to turn things over to Kofi Dasu.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable President of the City Council, Mayor Charlie Hales, Commissioner Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Steve Novick. My name is Kofi Dasu. I work for the City of Portland, but I'm speaking to you today as a board member of Africa House. It is my turn to say thank you for the great honor you are giving us to present our report to you, to give you a deep and whole picture of the conditions that African immigrants and refugees are going through in Portland and in Multnomah County, and also to make some recommendations on how we can use some culturally appropriate solutions, approaches to the solutions. We knew that many things were not going well for us in the African immigrant and refugee communities, but it was difficult for us to show it concretely and to let other people understand us. So this report is very helpful for us and for our leaders to have a whole picture instead of the big picture that we usually have. This helps to have a whole picture and a full picture of our conditions and how we can address our issues specifically. Thanks to their abilities to get through difficult conditions. African immigrants and refugees, most of them remain quiet and continue to work hard to take care of their families. This report will help us, you know, show how their conditions are severe, and you have heard from Dr. Anne Curie Stevens. The report is also helpful to explore the main factors that serve as barriers to the success and well-being of our communities. The reports also provide the recommendations that I will give you some highlights in my presentation. The recommendations are culturally specific, and as you requested earlier, we would like to have a conversation with, you know, the city of Portland to find the appropriate ways to address our issues. We acknowledge that some factors are beyond our control, but some of them are within our control. I will use a simple example. Summer is over, so we don't have enough sunshine. But we will not ask the mayor or city council to bring us more sunshine during winter, because it is beyond our control. It is beyond your control. We thank nature to give us more sunshine this week, but that's not enough for our health condition. Again, about sunshine, we know that, you know, when there is less sunshine, African immigrant refugees have more challenges than others. And I will say why. Because we used to receiving sunshine and make our own vitamin D directly from our exposure to sunshine. But once here, we don't have enough sunshine. And in the last 3 years, I've learned that many of our immigrant refugees and immigrant refugee families were diagnosed with severe deficiency of vitamin D, including my family. And we started using vitamin D supplements. And many people don't know about that. And it is a public health issue. So this is a very, you know, a simple example that, you know, some things are simple. We may not need to spend more money to educate people that, okay, you are in a different world. You have to change your habit and, you know, use vitamin D. But most of our communities need some authorities to send that message. Healthcare authorities, political leaders, community leaders, to tell them, okay, this is the right way to live here. I've continued to do my work within my community, but that's not enough. I'm not a healthcare provider, so they take it, you know, not seriously. So that's one example. So we have some specific needs, some specific approaches to address our issues. You may also know that, you know, vitamin D is, the deficiency is closely related to depression. I found out in studies from the government, U.S. government websites. And you heard from Dr. Ann that the depression rate is higher in our communities than in other communities. So you can see the specificity of our needs and some simple solutions that we can have. So if you don't provide healthcare directly, I know that the city doesn't do that, but you can advocate with the federal government, the state government, the Multnomah County Health Department, you know, using your power to advocate for us. There are many other health issues like mental health. How do we address our mental health as immigrants and refugees from Africa? There are some of them that we do differently than the way it is done here. And we can help. If we talk, right after this presentation, we would like to start a conversation. I mean, yes, maybe tomorrow, because it will be 5 p.m. But we would like to start a conversation so that we can support the city on how to approach our issues, you know, on a culturally specific way. As I said, many other health issues that we can help the city and, you know, all the government officials support us. On behalf of the African immigrant and refugees communities, I want to thank the city of Portland for all the services that you provide that help our children in their education. The mayor said earlier that the city doesn't provide education directly, but you do a lot of things that support the education system. You know, the art teachers that you support with the Portland Public School, the safety, you know, all the parks and recreation centers that are around our schools, all these things support our children. And I know that the city has a program called Youth Leadership for Sustainability, supported by the Bureau of Environmental Services, or the gardening projects, the early childhood education and intervention, parenting education, and access to immunizations. I know that the city has a program like that. Those things support our children in their education. So I want to thank you very much for that. We believe that the city council has the power to change or influence the factors that cause barriers to us, to our success and our well-being. And in employment, housing, education, safety, and more. So please work closely with us. You know, Africa House, we can work together to address our issues specifically. In terms of, you know, employment, for example, Dr. Ann said, you know, paid skills training or on-the-job training can help the beginners to get into the job, and with the support, I believe they will succeed. You know, education, for example, there are many people who have school teaching background before coming here. You know, a training that leads to licensing can help them support our children, you know, culturally specific support that the Portland Public School needs. Other people have healthcare experience before coming here. They are medical doctors, nurses. You know, a training that will lead to licenses will help them to serve in the hospital so that they can support the medical field on a culturally specific way. I think they are the best to do that. There are many issues that, you know, when we go to the hospital, our doctors don't understand us. So they need our people to interpret to them that, okay, this is the best way to approach it. Housing, you know, how to increase the low-income housing resources, focusing on large families, because we have, we usually have large families in our communities. So that's a specific focus that we would like the city of Portland to help us address. And mediation services, culturally specific mediation services to avoid or prevent evictions. And non-discriminatory policies in housing, how to enforce them. Health services, again, culturally specific for African immigrants and refugees. The city can advocate with all the healthcare providers so that we can serve our communities appropriately. The Multnomah County Health Department has a training underway for African community health workers. We will ask the city to support the Multnomah County in that effort and ensure that funding goes directly to culturally specific organizations like Africa House so that we can address the issues appropriately. We mentioned the data system. We would like the city to work with Multnomah County where there is a visibility initiative started to make small communities more visible. So the city can support and work with Multnomah County to make that bigger. The Coalition of Communities of Color need more resources to continue the data improvement initiatives. So we would like the cities to support the communities of color, Coalition of Communities of Color in that effort. Education, you know, allocate more resources to prevent youth violence and gang activities. Even parents need, our parents need education around gang and youth prevention issues. The social pressure here is beyond our control as parents, and we need support so that we can support our children. You know, again, many immigrants come here with bachelor or higher degrees that are not recognized. So many of them have to start over with the high school level at Portland Community College for 2 years before they transfer to Portland State University. There are many examples. So, you know, working on how to recognize the credentials, you know, academic and professional credentials, we can have a conversation about that and, you know, work together. So the list seems long, but we believe we can immediately assign staff to start the conversation with us. And we want to start the conversation now. I mean, after this presentation, some of our requests may not require additional money, maybe just reallocation of money or refocus of the money. And we will address some of our issues to start before we start thinking about budgeting. So, and again, how to integrate our needs to your policies, I mean the city's policies and programs and practices, we can work together and do that. Finally, statistics show that the percentage of African immigrants and refugees becoming naturalized U.S. citizens is increasing every year. With our large families, the percentage is growing fast. For example, when I became U.S. citizen this year, suddenly I have 4 voters in my household and 2 more to come soon. So you can imagine, you know, how fast the, you know, but we know very well the most culturally way to engage and mobilize our communities for civic participation. And if we work together, we will do that. Alone, I can mobilize 100 people from my community very quickly to, you know, work on some legislative issues that are very important for the city council to support our communities. But right now, demobilization is not working, but together with the Coalition of Communities of Color, we are becoming more visible and more active in civic participation. So again, in coalition with the Native American communities, Latino American communities, the African American community, the Asian and Pacific American communities, and many allies, we are ready to work closely with the city government to improve the conditions for all and make Portland a more vibrant and prosperous place. And we want to start the conversation now. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.
Thank you. Great report. Further questions for this panel?
I have a couple. What's the date of this report?
It was released last month.
So it's actually yes. This year.
Yes.
Okay. So it's the next one of the series that you've been working on, and so it's September 13.
Correct.
Great, thank you. And then Kofi, thank you for your work with the Office of Equity and Human Rights, as well as with your volunteer work, and you too, Jimmy, with the Africa House. Are African immigrant leaders on the new Portlanders Council?
Yes.
And so I would suggest that that might be a way for the new Portlanders Advisory Council to give the city council your advice on appropriation of resources and things that the city can do to help African immigrants as well as the other immigrant populations that we have here. And I know that you're actively engaged in that pretty much every waking second of your day. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Great. Thank all. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And do we have others that are on the panel or signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. Anyone else wants to testify who's here? If not, then I think it's appropriate that we have a motion to adopt the report.
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion among us? Then let's take a roll call, Carla.
Novick?
One thing that's really striking about this report is we have a highly skilled, highly educated population that we're not taking full advantage of. And I think that that's, I mean, that's something we all need to work on. And thank you very much for bringing that in particular to our attention. Aye.
Fritz.
This is a remarkable report, another in the series, and thanks to Portland State University and the Coalitions of Communities of Color for working to provide the evidence, and it is indeed shocking. It's particularly shocking to me. My boss at OHSU in the psychiatry unit is an immigrant from Nigeria, and my wonderful coworker Dora Perry also is from Africa, so it is somewhat news to me at the level of immigrants from Africa who are not in positions that fully reflect their capabilities. And I know firsthand what wonderful contributions people from Africa add to our society here in Portland. Working with the Ethiopian and Somalian cab drivers over the past couple of years with the Communication Workers of America to establish the Union Cab Company has been one of the most exciting initiatives that I've been a part of on the City Council. And there are more things to do like that, that although the city is not responsible for credentialing or licensure or many of those other things, that there are specific things that we can and should do and that we will do to better to give more opportunities to folks. That's what the Office of Equity and Human Rights was all about, and why after the Coalition of Communities of Color put out the unsettling report and the Urban League State of Black Oregon report, Mayor Adams and I said, we're not just going to put these reports on the shelf. We are going to dedicate taxpayers' resources to establishing the Office of Equity and Human Rights, which we have done in partnership with all of the communities. And I'm very pleased that it's moving forward under Mayor Hales' leadership with the support, which, again, needs to be expanded. It's crucial that we pay attention, as the researchers have done, to the subgroups by disaggregating the data and teasing out, just like not everybody from the British Isles is the same and comes from the same cultural background. Not everybody from Africa, which, of course, is hugely bigger than Great Britain and Northern Ireland. There's many different cultures, and we need to avoid assuming that one size fits all. Each person has their own story. Each person has different needs, and we as a community are better when we share our resources and we take what is offered by African immigrants and acknowledge and celebrate and work together. There's some very thoughtful policy recommendations in this report, which we will take to heart. And I'm continuing to be committed to equitable treatment, to equity in every sense of the word. So we're starting with the Office of Equity and Human Rights, focusing largely on city government, city jobs, city services, city contracts. And we need to continue to do that, because until we in this company, as you could look at it, revise our thinking, learn what we don't know, and expand opportunities for our employees, we're not going to be successful in the community where it needs to happen. And indeed is happening in other companies and throughout our communities. We can do it. We have to do it, because the needs are there. The population is growing. And if we don't address these issues, we're all going down the tubes. We don't want to do that. We want to make sure that everyone is celebrated, everyone has opportunities, and together we grow and prosper. Thank you for your work. Aye.
Hales?
You know, I've served two tours of duty at this table. I'm on my second round of serving on the City Council. I served starting 20 years ago for 10 years. And a number of people have asked me, you know, what's different between that chapter and this chapter? And I think there